Blog Talk Radio.
Music, and I always forget to tell people that the title of that program, that music, is called Atlantis. And I've played the longer versions of it a few times. It goes on for about 2 minutes. The whole piece is wonderful. We've just taken a part of it and edited it down just so it's an intro and a completion of the program. But I really, really like that music. Hope you're doing well today. Big in local area here, we're really suffering with a drought. This is like the fourth year California has had water issues, and the fight's on. The fight's on for water. And when I say fight, most of the world doesn't realize that California is a huge agricultural business and feeds huge portions of our country. And so 80% of the water is allocated towards agriculture, leaving 20%. And Governor Jerry Brown just passed a new law restricting water usage in the big cities. I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, so our water is being reduced, and consumption people are being asked to keep an eye on what they use, and that means no more green lawns, means no heavy watering, and it's beginning to affect the leisure time too, because as you can imagine, golf courses and playgrounds and fields that have large acreage of lawns are being asked to cut back by 25%. And in many cases, that means that golf courses are having their water usage rationed to the point where they cannot maintain the vast greens that people use to play golf on. So it's affected me a little personally. Not only, I've been conserving water quite a bit. I just moved into a new place, as many of you know, Northern East Bay, and the guy who owns this complex is having to rethink his water system, because he is using an old system of pumping hot water, and it takes a couple of minutes to get hot water sometimes. So he's going to have to be considering other alternatives. For me, I'm experiencing a pollen allergy issues, because there's not enough water to keep the pollen down. And the pollen counts are huge right now, in the 90% range for Northern California. So I'm having friends that are dealing with tremendous amount of allergies. I've never known. I mean, I had hay fever when I was a kid, but geez, now it's like, it's, I mean, I'm having to look at pharmaceuticals, which, you know, decongestants, which I don't really like taking. So I haven't started yet, but this week has been a bit of a challenge for me. Anyhow, that's what's happening in California. I think generally people don't think about water enough, and watering your driveway, putting in water dependent plants, it's just not needed. So it's just time to conserve, really is. On the news front, I just posted an article that came out in CNN this morning. ISIS is continuing to destroy ancient UNESCO World Heritage Sites. And there's an article that was posted on the ancient city of Hatra in Iraq. And this group has just gone nuts. They're destroying major landmarks in the form of sculptures and statues, and they started doing it, but there's no reason with these people. They're just going in and destroying, you know, this is a 2,000 plus year old city that has these beautiful shrines that they're filming being destroyed. And the odd thing about it, well, it's not really that odd, and I've mentioned on the Facebook page a number of times that this is typical for invading cultures and to take over, to destroy a previous culture's heritage to show their new ideology. And I don't think ISIS, I don't know what their ideology is. I'm not politically focused enough to really care, because they're just kind of like madmen. But this article is titled UNESCO's Heritage Site in the City of Hatra. Shocking video emerges of ISIS destroying major sculptures and statues using sledgehammers and AK-47 rifles, basically just shooting stuff off the wall. The other thing that's interesting, and this has been reported before, is that these terrorists, if you want to call them that, are pillaging the major museums and posting a lot of these artifacts, or actually selling them through the black market to finance their operations. And it makes sense, but this is the first time I've ever heard about this. I don't know. It's really amazing how it continues. It's a sad state of affairs to see this. I've never been to Iraq, but there's some very, very old ruins there, old cities that are important links to our ancient past history. So it's a sad kind of a display. The other thing I wanted to mention is I posted an article about Earth humans in the distant past living to have great lifespans of 200 years or more. And in the Bible, Noah, Abraham, and some of the main characters are thought to have lived, or actually lived, many hundreds of years. The biblical figures are, in fact, I think Noah was noted as living to 900 years or more. And the article basically describes the Earth, you know, thousands of years ago, and possibly the reason for these great ages. If it wasn't necessarily nutrition, it may have been a state of the Earth itself, or a type of human that just lived longer. They call it lifespans into the ancient period. The article is a reprint from a magazine, And actually, it's from ancientorigins.net. But the article is unique because we don't know how, if it's true. You know, there's no way to find these people to dig up their bones to do analysis on. But if someone's living beyond a normal human lifespan, it's curious. If someone's living to be 200, 300 years old, how are they living that way? Are they a different kind of a human? Are they eating nutriently rich foods? Are they from a strain of humanoid that we don't know about? And so take a look at that article. It's on the Facebook page. As always, I suggest people read the Facebook, the Earth Ancients Facebook page, and see what's being posted, because it's pretty interesting material. By the way, happy spring, happy Passover, and happy Easter if you're here in the States. And I wish you all the best. Speaking of nutrition, our guest today, Christopher Vasey, is a fantastic author. He has written a book that I find quite amazing when it comes to not only the physical, mental, and spiritual focus of the body, but the book's called Spiritual Mysteries of Blood, Its Power, Transform Body, Mind, and Spirit. And Christopher is a naturopathic doctor, and he is he specializes in detoxification and rejuvenation. He's the author of The Acid Alkaline Diet for Optimal Health, The Naturopathic Way, The Water Prescription, and The Whey Prescription. And he's coming to us today from Switzerland. But before I bring him on, I have been fascinated by the properties of blood, not only because the Maya revered blood and had ceremonies around bloodletting, which actually de-evolved into human sacrifices and things like that, but many of the ancient cultures sanctified blood and the spirit of blood. And it was always curious to me, why? What was it about blood that was unique to them, and why did they sanctify it? So, Christopher, hi. How are you there?
Hello, Cliff. I'm fine. I'm phoning from Switzerland, and by the way, it's raining here.
Oh, it is raining.
Yeah.
We could use some rain here in California. So.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
So, what part of Switzerland are you calling from?
It's the French-speaking part of Switzerland that's near Geneva.
Okay.
Along the Lac Léman, it's called, Geneva Lake.
Very good. You're coming across fantastically. Well, let me ask you about this. This book, and I've just begun reading it, is fantastic. You look at blood and its role in spiritual development. And in the beginning, you describe your experience treating patients and seeing patients recover through their methods of healing, be it nutrition, be it reviewing their psychological makeup and maybe the stresses of their day. But you describe the discovery of a book by Oscar Ernest Bernhard and how this kind of changed your focus on your healing practice. Can you describe this this book and what's unique about the message in it? I think it was called In the Light of Truth, the Grail Message.
Yes, it's a book which helped me a lot. The author is, as you said, Oscar Ernst Bernhard. He's someone who was born in Germany in the past century, and he signed the book with the name Abtushin, which is a Persian Arab name, because in fact, where it goes, further back. I forgot to go further back. In his book, he describes what is creation, the creation where in which we live, from the spiritual plane or paradise to the beyond, and then the plane of gross matter where we are now. And he describes where we come from the spiritual plane. Why do we come on Earth? Why do we incarnate in California or Switzerland, in this family or that other? Many things which are in relation with the basic questions of life people ask themselves, well, usually ask themselves, why am I here? Where do I come from? What will happen with me afterwards? All these different questions are tackled in this book. And among other things, he tells about the real role of the blood being a link between the spirit, the physical body, and the immaterial spirit of man, that is, the spirit taken in the sense of soul. As you just said, in my practice, I saw people coming to be treated for their rheumatism or eczema, I mean, physical troubles. But after a few times, they said, well, I'm cured, but, you know, it's funny, I was always depressed, now I'm not depressed anymore. Or I had no self-confidence, now I'm much more confident. I've got, and I was always a bit of fear and full of anxiety and not anymore. And I was wondering always, how is it possible, as we are a spirit and not only a brain directing a brain, a physical body? Because if our true ego was the brain, then the explanation would be more vitamins, minerals, the brain is better nourished and better oxygenated, and therefore it will work better. But that wasn't the good answer, because our true ego is the spirit. And it's in this book, In the Light of Truth, The Grail Message, that I found the answer to my questions. The blood is very important in relation to our state of mind, the way we perceive things in our surrounding, the way we feel.
It's unique. You know, your book talks a lot about the wisdom of the ancient people, and you acknowledge that the Greeks, the Egyptians, and other ancient people understood when to eat and when to abstain from eating food to obtain higher levels of consciousness and connecting with that spiritual part of their whole makeup. Can you tell us a little bit about what happens when somebody fasts?
Yes. Well, all those ancient civilizations had fasted or had followed restrictive diets for some period, not the whole year, of course, but some period. Because on basically what happens is that when someone doesn't eat anymore, the body doesn't receive any food anymore, but it needs it to be able to continue to function. So as it doesn't get the vitamins, proteins, and so forth from outside of the body, it has to find them inside its own organic tissues. And there's a phenomena which takes place, which is called autolysis. It's a kind of digestion by the body of different tissues and substances which are in the different organs or are part of the organs, in order to take proteins, vitamins in one part of the body and bring them to another part where it's more important. This is a well-known phenomena, and it takes place in an intelligent manner. It is not the heart or the brain which is autolyzed in the first place. It's first the most things which are not important and not at all, such as toxins and sick tissues. So when someone fasts, he is digesting his toxins, and they are recycled, and what cannot be recycled is eliminated. So there's a purification of the blood, of the tissues, and this brings back the people to health, as basically in natural medicine, if someone is ill, it's because he has too many toxins in his internal environment. But what has also been observed is that the frame of mind of people following a fast changes a lot. They become much more sensitive to what surrounds them. They become more calm, serene. They open themselves to other interests or other influences. And that was what was looked for by when they did fasting, it was to make themselves more open to spiritual influences of one kind or another. Because it is a fact that the people become more sensitive, less eager to act in gross matter and to feel with their senses. They're more open within, spiritually, with their heart, and then can catch things or understand better things which come from above.
So you describe the ancient Egyptians as actually fasting during special periods of time to increase their not only their intuition, but their psychic awareness. Now, would they have to fast for lengthy periods of time, or do we know anything about that? How long they would have to fast to really gain those levels of heightened spiritual awareness?
I think that the first few days of a fast, there's a lot of physical things taking place, elimination of toxins and so forth. The person doesn't feel too well at the beginning. But after a week, shall we say, for someone normal, I mean, where the fast is going well, he already feels that he's feeling much better, he's more open, and after 2 weeks a bit more, and 3 weeks even more, and so forth. It's not a question of fasting for 6 months. After 1 week or 10 days, it already starts to be better. And what shows that it is the case is that sometimes it is not fasting which is followed, but a restrictive diet, like a diet without proteins or no fish, or no meat, I mean, but fish and so forth. Like the period of Lent, we're just ending, well, for those who followed it, Lent finishes, it's 44, it's two or 6 days of a restrictive diet before Easter. And this also works. People feel different, more open, better awareness, and so forth.
Interesting. Do you, when those toxins are released and dumped, is there any increase in intelligence, or is it just more clarity? Would you say?
No, people will not get more intelligent, or they will not change character. One cannot change the different faculties of a personality just by fasting. If something changes in our personality, it's because we as a spirit, we work on to become better, more patient, more open, more intuitive, and so forth, or a better man in general. It's a result of an effort. But by cleaning the body of all its toxins, it cleans the blood, and it enables the person to become that much easier. His efforts are supported by a better blood composition and radiation, as I explain in my book.
Interesting. You know, you have a fascinating chapter on spirit and its relationship to the brain. And what is the difference between the brain and the spirit? Aren't they one and the same?
Yeah, most people think that the brain and the spirit, it's all one. Because the general idea taught by science is that science, which is has a materialist approach, that is, considers only what is material, science thinks that we, as a human being, we are a physical body which is directed by a brain, and that's all. So when the brain works, emanates from it something which is conscious, can think, decide, and they say our true ego is the brain is our true ego, and so forth. But there's another approach of life, which is the spiritual approach, which considers that there are more things than just material things, and among other things, the immaterial spirit of man, which incarnates in the physical body and uses it during its sojourn on Earth. And the spirit stems from the spiritual plane, which is at the top of creation, as all the big religion teaches. It's also called paradise. And therefore, the spirit is made with the materials of the spiritual plane, which are of a totally different kind, species, as the material of the plane of gross matter, where we are now, and which contribute to build our physical body. So there's a big difference between the two, and the spirit therefore is incarnates in a body which it uses as a tool. And this body has different instruments, the hands to work, the legs to move about, and up in the head something a very similar to a very powerful computer, the brain. So the brain is just a tool in the hands at the disposal of the spirit, but it is not the spirit. That's the difference between the spiritual and the materialist approach. The spirit, the soul, from which all the different religions talk about, is something of a different species than the physical body and the brain. It's a difference. But it's true that the spirit uses the brain.
Okay. Oh, this is the next question, and I've understood this for a long time. I visited and studied with the Maya shaman and Native Americans, and they understood, as well as most ancient cultures, that the body was a vehicle for the spirit, and the spirit was the true driving force of each individual. Can you talk a little bit about the purpose of incarnation, in other words, the experience of physical existence? You talked a little bit about it, but your book is very precise in helping people understand that the spirit is what is the true nature of what we're about.
Yeah. And why does the spirit incarnate on Earth? That's a good question. Many people ask themselves, what am I doing here? We all strive to do better or be in a better situation. And why is that all? Well, the answer to this question I found in the great message we were talking about. And there's an important information which is given in it. Not only does we as a spirit stem from the spiritual plane, but at the beginning of our existence, we are a spirit which has all its the faculties which the Creator has given us, but these faculties have not been developed yet. And that's why in the Grail message, we are described as being spirit germs. We are like a grain of corn which has a lot of potentiality. It can grow in a plant, give grains and so forth. But it has not yet. And the aim, the way for a spirit germ to develop its faculty is to leave the spiritual plane in which it is and to go down in the plane, different planes of the ethereal matter, the beyond, and stay on these different planes and also then finally come and incarnate on Earth. So the reason why we incarnate on Earth and begin this long journey into creation is to develop the faculties which are in us through experiencing different situations. All the different situations we experience as human beings in life. We are young, we've got to learn to walk, and we are in the surrounding, there are people around, we've got to fight to get our way, and not meet violence, but we've got to make efforts to go forward and so forth. So that's the reason why we incarnate. And then the next question is, why do we have to develop our faculties? What's the aim of it? Well, when we have fully developed our faculties, then we are entitled to go up again in the planes of the beyond, which are higher and higher. And when we have fully developed our faculties and know how to use them perfectly, with respect to our neighbors, with love to our neighbors, then we are entitled to go back in the spiritual plane, our plane of origin. And that's where real life begins, because all this long journey we do in creation is just to, like the school of life, to develop and become a fully developed spirit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the spirit is the true driver of the physical body, and do you believe in reincarnation?
Yes, yeah, I do. When the spirit is on this great journey, it incarnates at a certain time, and it will sow different things, act, do different things which are good and not so good, And then when we die, the spirit moves out of the physical body and goes on experiencing things in different planes of the beyond. And sometimes, every now and again, the development path of the spirit necessitates that the spirit comes back on the earth, because it's a special place, and to experience more things, and also to repair all the bad things it has done. It's not only to learn, it's also to repair. So there's a notion of karma. We build a karma, and we receive it, that's our fate on earth. So yes, the spirit cannot learn everything it has to learn on earth in one stay. It comes back several times. So reincarnation in the spiritual approach is something which is natural, which is good, which is part of it, and which in fact answers many questions. When someone has this conviction that reincarnation is a reality, then he understands better, or he can answer the question many people ask themselves: why do so many people suffer? Why do we have to go through difficult times and so forth? It's because we're reaping things we have sown in past lives.
Interesting. You, as a nutritional physician, do you believe that people have soul ages? In other words, if you work on hundreds, if not thousands of people, and have you come to the conclusion that there are people who incarnate that have had many, many lifetimes, and other people who have had very few lifetimes?
Well, that I cannot say, because I can't feel it or so, but I would say what I can feel. You talked about old and young souls or spirits. I think, and that's a knowledge which is given, taught in the Grail message, we, as spirit journeys, we all leave the spiritual plane at the same time and stay in the different planes of the beyond, and then incarnate and reincarnate and so forth. So the age of all those souls is the same. But there's a difference, because I think when people say it's an old soul, they mean he's very mature, full of wisdom, and others are not. And that's the difference, and it's true. There are souls which are more advanced than others, and this is not because they've been... this is not by chance or arbitrary. It's because a spirit has a free will. It can decide whatever it wants. And some spirits are more eager to learn, to develop, to be good people than others. So, of course, some people are more developed, have more wisdom than others.
Okay, interesting. Let's get into the blood, because this is the basis of your book. Can you... describe what blood radiation is and the importance of blood radiation.
Yeah. We've just said that a human being is a spirit which is incarnated in a physical body. And here the question is, how does the spirit stay linked with the body? So we've probably all heard about the silver cord and all the astral body. They take a part in linking the spirit to the physical body. But definitively, the last link, which is so important, is the blood. Well, that's what is explained in the Grail message. The blood is the link between the spirit and the body. It builds a bridge between the two. And if we think about it, the blood is not only flowing in the big vessels, but also in the small capillaries, which are very small and go everywhere deep in our organic tissues. So there's blood everywhere in our body, well, nearly everywhere in our body, and this blood is the link for the spirit to really be able to handle and take hold of the body and animate it and direct it to act here on Earth. It's a tool to be able to perceive what's happening here on Earth and also to act on this plane, and the spirit must be well incarnated and has to be able to have a good hold of the body to able to use it. And this is done through the blood. It's an information which is given in this book. And when I read about it, I thought, well, this will explain different things I've had observed in people, but without knowing the answer. Depending on the blood composition or the quantity of blood we have, we are more or less well incarnated in the body. And we feel things differently, we perceive things differently. Just to give an example, if someone has a normal amount of blood, his spirit is correctly linked to the body. But if he starts losing blood, therefore, because he's had an accident, he's injured, well, this quantity of blood becomes smaller and smaller, and therefore the link becomes weaker and weaker. Therefore, the person, the spirit is not correctly linked and becomes unconscious. And if there's really not enough blood in to build the link, then the spirit, the soul, will not be held in the body anymore and will move out of it, and that's what is called death. Therefore, death of the physical body, which is not animated by the spirit anymore, but not death of the spirit, which goes on existing and developing in the beyond.
Hmm. Is there any method that we have today to measure spirit in the body? I mean, the Chinese have the qi, and they have a whole history of acupuncture based on the qi and the meridian points. But what would you say in your practice is testing a person's spiritual strength?
Well, the spirit is nothing strange to us. It is ourself. We are a spirit. And when we talk to someone, it's a spirit talking through the body. So is the spirit correctly linked to the body, is powerfully linked, awake, active? That we can see if the person is active, participates, feels deeply what's happening and so forth, or if he's just sleeping his way through life, not feeling anything, not much, and so forth. That's a way of doing it. But in my knowledge, there's no way like the Chinese. Another way than the Chinese used to do it. But I wonder if they measured the spirit or just the vitality of the body. I'm not too sure. I don't know enough about it. Yeah.
That's interesting.
But also, someone can feel it himself. Is he well incarnated or not? I mean, you meet people who eat so lightly. I mean, they eat only vegetables and fruits, therefore they lack different food items like meat or cheese or eggs or fish, cereals and so forth, which gives the blood composition a good quality, which enables the spirit to be well incarnated. And when someone follows a diet which is too restrictive for too long and which doesn't agree, in fact, with him, he is not well incarnated. And these people are a bit dreamy, not completely there. You've probably seen some. They're not very happy either because they're not well incarnated. They cannot enjoy life as other people.
Well, that's a fantastic statement, and this is what I want to bring up. But before I do, I want to remind our guests that we are taking questions today. So if you have any questions for our guests, you can call at 347-826-9565. That's 347-826-9565. Or send me an email on Facebook. Just send it to me, Cliff Dunning, on Facebook, and I'll get it. So, Christopher, this question of diet is big in your book, and I want to bring this up now because this is very important. And being here in Northern California, there's all kinds of lifestyles that are open. People are trying new lifestyles. It's kind of a mecca for eating. And in your book, you make extremely important statement about the spirits, the strong spirit and the light spirit and the weak spirit, and the various dietary practices that people have. And you suggest that being a vegetarian or a vegan is diets that are not necessarily good for the spirit and creates what you call a disconnection. Can you describe this for us? I mean, are you saying that we should all eat a little bit of protein in the form of meats? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah. No, what I'm saying is that basing myself on this knowledge that the blood is the link between the spirit and the body, it is important that we give the blood all the food it needs that we eat the foods which the blood needs in order to build a good blood composition. And usually in the natural medicine circles, people are very concentrated on food. I was also, when I started naturopathy, in relation with the toxins, not to eat too much foods which give toxins in order not to become ill, as too many toxins make people ill. And therefore, there's a tendency to restrictions and more restrictions. And with ideas in our minds, the theories are very good. But in practice, what I have observed in these last 35 years of practice, and many other naturopaths also have observed that, is that some people eat not enough, not all the foods they should or the body is planned to get, and therefore they are not well, they are badly incarnated in their body. And I mean, if the body is used to receive meat every day or every second day to build his blood composition, and suddenly the person becomes a vegan or whatever other kind of diets, and it's the body is not used to produce such a strong blood radiation without the meat. So the blood radiation will be weaker and the spirit not as well incarnated in the physical body. And therefore, what I'm saying is that one should take care not only to think about toxins when we eat and restrict, but also think our blood, our spirit needs a lot of variety of foods to be able to build a good blood composition and radiation in order to hold the spirit well incarnated.
Okay.
So therefore, there are two different kinds of people in relation with meat. I mean, some people are very well incarnated in the body. They are very physical, and they can go without a lot of meat or even not eat meat for some time, and then just once every few days or so, and that would be okay. A good restriction is good for them, but other people are basically always badly incarnated, not strongly incarnated, and if they cut out all the meat, fish, and animal proteins, for example, then they will be even less incarnated. So it depends on the people. Some people can go without a lot of meat, it's no problem, but some people have to keep it. And it's good to know, because some people are not aware of it and say, well, I've got to make more restrictions to feel better, but they are going in the wrong direction. They should reintroduce things which are lacking in their diet.
Let's talk about this term, badly incarnated. It's fascinating to me. What would you say is a characteristic of somebody who's poorly incarnated physically, whose spirit has come in the body and they're just not well incarnated?
Well, they're not very active people. They lie around, they're a bit lazy. It's not laziness, they don't have the energy their spirit is not well enough incarnated to move the body around. Of course it can, but they're not very active. They're not very interested in what's happening in life, participating in different events. Eating is not really their favorite activity. Well, it shouldn't, but some people like to eat, they're happy to eat, and they will not skip a meal and everything. But these people who are not well incarnated, they are not interested in foods. They just eat to be able to live, but that's not more. I mean,
so they don't really care about their food, and they're eating whatever fast food, or whatever, just to put food, so they're not.
They can also
hungry.
Be vegetarians, which who thinks who eat a bit of vegetables, fruits, and think, well, that's enough. But it's a lack of energy and interest, a lack of fire, of drive to be active here on Earth.
Okay, but you also talk about people that are heavy meat eaters, and they tend to be more aggressive, have more anger, and just tend to be prone to more episodes of rage. And so talk a little bit about overindulgence of the protein or the meats, red meat.
The big meat eater is someone who the meat pushes the body to produce blood. And that can be, so therefore the quantity of blood they have is above average. And this can be observed because they are all red in the face, they have bloodshot eyes. And this great amount of blood makes the spirit well incarnated in the physical body. It puts the body under high pressure. That's why they have high blood pressure, these people. They are prone to congestive illnesses. Their blood is also very full of toxins because of all the meat. So they are hot-tempered, impatient, irascible, aggressive. I'm describing them in a caricature way. They react very quickly. They can be violent and so forth because they have a lot of energy, and all their system, body systems, nervous system, everything is overstimulated by all the toxins which are brought by the meat. Mm-hmm. On the opposite, someone who doesn't eat any meat is very calm and not active and so forth. Well, just the opposite. Huh? Mm-hmm. And there are experiments which have been made with animals. For example, if a dog is basically a meat eater, but you can feed him with other food and cut out complete and lower very much the intake of meat, and he will not be so wild and active.
Aggressive.
Or when he sees a cat, he will not run after it and so forth. But if you cut, that's because of the lack of meat. If something is lacking in it and in the blood, and the dog becomes quite passive. But if you go on and cut completely the meat, then he cannot stand it, and he will start again to hunt whatever he can find to get the meat. It's more powerful than himself. He has to eat meat in order to rebalance his moods and the way he feels.
Mm-hmm. So would you say that the modern day diet, the vegan diet, which has no animal protein at all and relies purely on plant protein, is not a good diet for the spirit?
I would say it's not a theory. It's also experience. I've seen people eating like that. It's not good for them physically. At the beginning it is, of course, because there's a change. When you change from overeating, bad food and all, and become a vegan, then you feel better for months or a year or two because the blood, you don't have all the toxins coming in and so forth. But after that time, which is different for everybody, there's a lack of something, and physically the person is not so strong and happy and full of drive. And also for the spirits, the spirit is not so well incarnated, so it cannot participate as well in the daily events and feel deeply what's happening, what's so good, what's so bad, and so forth. And therefore, as the aim of the sojourn of the spirit here on Earth is to experience life here on Earth, well, they're not experiencing it fully, so they are missing they are not taking advantage of the time they are here on Earth. They're floating too much, I think. But, of course, there might be one or two exceptions. But basically, or generally, it's not the best. It would be better to keep just a little animal proteins, eggs, and cheese as a minimum, but it would be good to have flesh, I mean fish or meat, just every now and again to keep things in order, the blood composition in balance. And they will feel better. That would be better, yeah.
So if I understand this correctly, the blood radiation, which is where the spirit connects to the body, as you eat these correct nutrients, the bond or the chemical makeup of the blood is such that the spirit comes in a solid manner and allows greater perception, greater participation with the human, with other humans. And according to you, you tend to be happier. Is that correct?
Yes, that's it. Yep.
Okay.
You're exactly that. It makes the bridge, and the spirit is well incarnated in the body and then is fully capable of dealing. Of course, there will be problems and maybe times, bad times where the person will be sad or have to fight to reach a goal and so forth. That's normal, but he will manage it. Other people who don't have that blood composition and radiation are not well incarnated, and they are very quickly overrun by all that. They get depressed or are very anxious or always stress about everything because they cannot get a hold of their body well enough to fight and their way. So of course they don't feel well, and that's one of the big aim of the book is to show that if someone doesn't feel well, is not in a good frame of mind, always anxious or lack of self-confidence or too aggressive or irritated and so forth, it's maybe part of their character, that's for sure, but it can also be that their blood radiation, composition radiation is not correct, and therefore they lack something in order to have the strength, the calm, the focus to act in a certain manner. And it's worth it to change their diet and in a way or another, which is described in the book, to change the blood radiation and composition and therefore feel better in themselves within.
Interesting. Is there any method that you've discovered to accentuate the composition of the blood to the point where it is maximizing the link between spirit and body so that someone is in a higher level of consciousness to be able to perceive, to be able to connect intuitively, to have even possible greater clarity so that, as an example, There's, as you know, there are what they call the superfoods, which are the algaes and the organic foods that are purely grown without any herbicides or pesticides. And so do you think that would accentuate the human vehicle in any manner?
I think if someone eats really good foods in a balanced way, he will feel well, but he will be still himself. And then he is much more in the position to him as a spirit to open himself more or to act more in a direction or learn more, be more aware. But it's then an effort of the spirit. But this effort is not hindered by a bad blood composition, which will make the person very linked to his body and too much linked to his body, his senses, and materialist, in other words. I think I could also explain it in a different way. We talked about fasting. This is a way to help the spirit be more receptive to things coming from above. You also mentioned at the beginning that the Mayas did bloodletting in a sacred way. If someone has less blood, suddenly, well, his spirit is not as correctly linked to the body, and he can also be more open to things which I can imagine a shaman or so forth can do that, and be more open to things from the beyond or above. But this is a bit artificial and not the most natural way. If we are more open, more spiritual, more linked to the higher powers, it's because we as a spirit, we yearn towards that. We open our spirits, we make an effort to let all the material things aside for a while, or not be so interested in food and other things like that, but to be more open to spiritual things. And the more we act in this way as a spirit, the more open and the better we will be in that field. It's more a question of we as a spirit. But I understand your question. It would be good if I could tell you, well, eat a lot of carrots and you'll have wonderful intuitions. It doesn't work like that.
Interesting. You have a section on sleep and how the spirit works through us physically during sleep. The ancients knew the importance of sleep. And in the Western culture, we are greatly sleep-deprived. People cannot sleep. There's insomnia. There's people that are worried about having, their lifestyle. It causes them to have a great deal of worry, so they have reduced sleep. Can you talk a little bit about how spirit works through sleep and the importance of sleep?
Yes. Well, what happens is that at the end of the day, because we were active, there are more toxins in the blood, and this induces the need to sleep. And also the spirit, which has been active during all the day, maybe yearns also to be linked again to the spiritual powers which come from above. And therefore there's this change of blood composition radiation, which helps the body to separate, move out of the body, and which makes us go to sleep. But the spirit doesn't move and go far away. It's just not so closely linked to the physical body. And when it is in that state, it can be in a more direct relation or linked with the spiritual forces which come from above. And it can regenerate, and it can experience different things. And these experiences, which are very intense, take form in the dreams we have, but not all there are two kinds of dreams. In the first place, the dreams, which is the digestion of all the events of the day by the brain, and these give dreams which are confused, tiring, and nerve-wracking and so forth. But there's another kind of dream which takes place during the REM, R-E-M phases, rapid eye movement phases. These are phases which come five or six times during the night. They just last 1 or 2 minutes. And during that time, the spirit is, that's the time where the spirit has moved out of the body for just a small moment and then comes back. And in these moments, it can experience something, and it will give those dreams which are very intense, have a lot of meaning, very clear, which impress us still when we wake up, and give us also indications on how to run our life. We get intuitions or information during these periods. So we need these five or six periods of REM. Well, that's the amount we have nowadays, but I know that because it has been studied by other people, in tribes which are very close to nature, and maybe shaman also, they have much longer phases, REM phases, than we have. And they can also feel better and be more open to life than we are. And it's true, as you say, nowadays people really don't sleep enough, and that's why they have to take so much coffee and Coca-Cola and or smoke and everything to stimulate them, because they lack the rest they needed, in fact.
That's fascinating. I'm sorry, you made a point about native people sleep. Did you say they sleep longer, or they have periods where they'll sleep longer because of the importance
They have periods where the NDE, no, the sorry, the REM phases are longer.
Okay. So is that periods? Okay, periods where they need more dream periods to dream, or just for rest?
It's the periods where the spirit is has moved out of the body. It's not so tightly linked to the body during sleep, and that's where the spirit regenerates. And they have longer periods than we have, because we are too active, too excited, and we don't sleep enough. Also,
that's interesting.
Well, not you and me, but other people.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think sleep is a very important element that people just do not realize. And I have friends and even family members that are sleep deprived because of the stress of their lives, and I think it's very unhealthy, and there hasn't been enough research done on it, but it could be something that actually ages us. And as you say, the spirit comes in most fully during sleep, and so not having that connection probably is a detriment, wouldn't you say?
Yes, it is.
I want to move on. We have just a few minutes to go, but you make a really astounding claim in your book, which I guess makes sense, but I really want you to explain it. You state that it's very important that the food that one eats is locally grown in the region of that person's birth. And you go on to say that the spiritual connection, the blood, the body, and the spirit are strongest, and it really supports that when somebody eats locally grown food. And you actually give an example of somebody who, I think you say an Englishman who would live and move to Africa, should try to find foods that are similar or grown or imported or something. Can you explain that? It's just a fascinating precept.
Yeah. Well, nature forms us, we human beings, and we take form here in California or Switzerland, but it also gives us where we are the food we need. I mean, the food in the tropics is a lot of fruits, juicy fruits, sugar, easy and vegetables, easy to digest, fish and so forth. But in the north, the Eskimos, for example, they don't have the same kind of diets, or in each region, nature gives us the food we need because of the climate there is in that region. So if we are born in a place, we've got to eat from the region. I mean, it's more than 30 kilometers, it's maybe 100 or more, but it's food from that region. Eating food from Switzerland, for example, it means eating apples. But if I eat apples from Switzerland, it's not the same as if I eat apples from California, because California is a warmer place, it's somewhere totally different. And the composition of the apple is different from the composition of the apples here in Switzerland, even if it's of the same species. And it's the same thing with all the different kinds of foods. They have a different composition depending on where they come from. So it's a whole. If we eat the food from one region, we are nourished by what nature, and therefore what I mean is by what the creator of nature has thought was good for us, planned that is good for us. Now, if we don't eat the food of our region because we move away, then our body does not receive the elements, the nutrients, which is necessary for it to build a good blood composition and radiation, and the person will feel unwell. I met one woman who came from New Zealand or Australia, and she came to live here in Europe, and she said at the beginning everything went fine, and then I became more and more tired, and it was terrible. I went home, started to eat, of course, food from my home, and I gained all my energy again. And I came back to Europe, and the same thing happened. She went back to Australia, same thing happened. And that's why also when the the people, well, the English people, when they went all over the world in the empire, in the colonies, they stayed a few years, but it was compulsory that they go back to where they came from for 3, 6 months or so to get energy again to go back to where they were. Because when you are abroad, you don't get the food you need to survive or to feel well. So if you cannot go home, there's a middle path. Eat some of your foods from where you come from and some of the foods for where you live. And this is to try and find the balance, how much of each is necessary for you to feel well.
Okay. So as an example, I eat a lot of fruits and vegetables, but in California, when the seasons are not right for certain fruits, they come from Mexico, Argentina, and as far south as Chile. Are you saying that it would be more beneficial to find a locally grown, or what they call out here, a farmer's market, to eat my fruits and vegetables just because the blood radiation would be optimized?
Yeah, and I would also say it would be better if you take food from Mexico, which is not far away. It's probably still okay. But if you go South America, then it's a bit too far and too down south. But also, when there's no more of one kind of food because it's not the season, then that's also a sign that it's not really the food we should eat. You should eat food from the season, following the season. That also is planned by nature. It gives us food at the correct moment of the year when we need it. And therefore, if we cannot eat strawberries all year round, if we eat strawberries from our region, but strawberries are the best for our health and the blood composition if we eat them when it's in season where we live. And when it's not the case anymore, then we switch to other fruits and so forth. It's only nowadays that we can eat fruits, apples the whole year, vegetables, the same vegetable all the year round. It's just because it's coming from another place, but it's not in harmony with nature.
Okay, so again, regionally, and would you say let's talk about rather than kilometers, we're in America, so let's talk about miles. So you said, is it 100-mile radius, or can it be in the region? So if I'm in California, it can go as far south as Mexico for certain vegetables and fruits.
Yeah.
But perhaps when it comes to eggs and dairy, it should be somewhat regional. Is that what you would suggest?
Yes, yeah. The best is regional, and if it's not possible, then the closer, which is
okay.
A bit vague, but it can be 100 mile or 200 miles. If it is the same kind of climate and so forth, yeah.
Okay, let's take a question here from Sandy, she's in Taos, New Mexico. She wants to know, what is the difference between organic and commercially grown produce and its effect on the spirit?
Well, organically grown food is really in respecting nature, giving the plants, the carrots or salad and everything, exactly what nature has planned for it, so that it gives its best. It has all the vitamins, the vitamin mineral contents is much higher. If it's industrial agriculture, there's first, it's not grown in the same way. They put a lot of fertilizers, which gives certain minerals in high quantity, but the others are not present. There's also a lot of treatments, like to fight against fungicides, insecticides, and so forth, which are poison and which stay in part in the plant. So therefore, the food there is lacking in nutrients, and it is rich in poisons. So that will have a different effect on the blood. If it's processed, if it's organic food, it gives everything which is needed, and it's good for the blood radiation. That's the way it should be. If we eat industrially grown food, it's lacking in vitamins, so the blood composition will not be good. It will have poison, so the blood composition will be detrimental to a good link with the spirits. So the best is, of course, the more natural, and that's organic food.
Okay, good. That's a good one. This is Jack from Los Angeles. He says, I had a blood transfusion during surgery and have not felt well since. It's been over 2 years. How do I fix my blood? I don't know what that means. I guess he's...
I understand that. Nowadays, we know how to transfuse blood, so the blood group is respected. The law of compatibility between the two different groups is respected. But there are many different characteristics in the blood, and he has received the blood which the other characteristics were not close enough to what the blood composition that his spirit needed. And that's why the link is a bit not as good as it should be. But usually what happens is that the body is continuously regenerating the blood, and the old blood, the strange blood received by this person, is eliminated, and therefore then the blood is again exactly what the person needs. But in his case, it's not yet the case. 2 years is long, and I think he should make a change in his diet. In my book, there's different clues which are given how to change diet, how to analyze your diet, and how to change it to improve the intake of vitamins and the different foods which are lacking. And in addition to this, if he had a surgery, I don't know if it was very important or not, or what kind of illness he had, but probably organs like the liver and the kidneys have not really become fully healthy again. They were maybe a bit weakened by the illness and weakened by the surgery and the medicine taken and so forth. And it would be good if he took plants, herbal remedies, which stimulate the liver and the kidneys, and for 2 months, maybe 2-3 months, in order to stimulate these two organs, which are very important for the blood composition, because they are the ones which clean the body of the toxins, and they are also the two organs which keep the level of different vitamins at a certain level in order for the blood composition to be good.
Great advice. Do you think we are relearning what the ancients knew about the body? It seems like we're relearning a lot of information that the Maya knew naturally, that the Greeks and maybe even the earlier people. It seems that the native people who lived on the land had more of a connection to the earth and didn't have these problems that we have today. What do you say about that?
Yes, I think in the past, in the ideal situation, people reflected on how the body worked, what it needed, in general terms. But nowadays, we can go inside the body and analyze not only the organs, but the cells and the kernel of the cell and all the enzyme and this and that. We go in such details that the overview of how a body function is lost. But not in natural medicine. In natural medicine, we have this holistic view, the view of the whole body in general, how it works. And, well, the danger for natural medicine nowadays is to go too much in details in order to follow science and classical medicine. It's when we go in too much details, then we forget basic things which are so important for us. And I think in the past, people had this knowledge of the general way the body worked and followed the indication of nature. But also I think that in the past, they were much more open to the invisible. They were much more linked to the energies of the body, the astral body and the chakras and so forth. And they acted on that level much more than on the physical body. Or they could, not maybe not more, but they were much better at that level that than nowadays allopathic medicine is, because they don't consider at all this the side, the energetic side of it, and they go by without, well, they can't be helpful in this field. And we know it's very helpful, like acupuncture works with the energies flowing in the meridians, and it has a terrific effect, I mean a good effect, but it's energy. You can't prove it's not material, but it's energy and it works. So, or magnetism, that's also not material. And I think in the past they were more linked to these kind of approaches. So.
Fascinating. The book is called The Spiritual Mysteries of Blood, Its Power to Transform Body, Mind, and Spirit. My guest today has been Dr. Christopher Vesse. He's calling from, joining us today from Switzerland. And he has a website that I would like to suggest people go to. It's his name, ChristopherVesse.ch. I'll spell it, www.christopherVesey.ch. I just learned here that the book is going to be out in May. Is it coming out the first week in May, Christopher? Do you know offhand?
Well, I thought it was the middle of April.
Maybe it is. Okay.
Yeah. But very soon, very soon. If people are interested, they can order it straight away at Inner Tradition or Amazon or other places, and it will be sent to them. It's a question of a week or two, I think.
Yeah, it's a very important book. The connection to spirit, blood radiation, these topics should be in all of our vocabulary, simply because we want to get the most out of this physical reality that we can. So, wonderful. Thank you for being with us, Christopher. And this is a wonderful book, and I will have it up on my Facebook page for everyone to look at in any detail. Do you have any YouTube presentations that people can look at? Just curious.
Yes,
are you
on
YouTube?
My website. Yes, on my website, I've got a few. I've got an English part where there are different the different YouTube videos. Yeah.
Okay.
If
excellent.
They, or if they type Christopher Vesey in YouTube, they'll find the several videos in English.
Okay.
Many in French,
they're...
but some in yeah.
Okay.
But in English. Too.
Yeah. Fantastic. Great. This has been wonderful. So I strongly suggest you, our audience, check this book out, The Spiritual Mysteries of Blood, and you know, optimize your physicality. So thanks for joining us again. That was great.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thanks. So that's our program today. Next week, our guest is Robbie Holtz. She'll be speaking on the Aboriginal Secrets of Awakening, ancient techniques of healing, and forgotten techniques on connecting to higher realms. I hope you have a great day, and be well.